this reason, this child will be well known in the world as one who is protected by the personality of Godhead. O most fortunate one, there is no doubt that this child will become a first-class devotee and will be qualified with all good qualities. So please repeat after me.
This child will be well known in the world.
As one who is protected by the personality of Godhead.
O most fortunate one.
There is no doubt that this child will become a first class devotee. And will be qualified with all good qualities. Okay, again, I want to thank everyone for your association coming to Bhagavatam class. Now we need everybody to please mute at this time, and I'm going to go ahead and mute everybody on pre-conferencing myself. So just give me 1 second. Okay. So, purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Lord gives protection to all living beings because He is their supreme leader. The Vedic hymns confirm that the Lord is the supreme person amongst all personalities. The difference between the two living beings is that one, the personality of Godhead, provides for all other living beings. And by knowing Him, one can achieve eternal peace. That is from Katha Upanishad. Such protection is given by His different potencies to different grades of living beings. But as far as His unalloyed devotees are concerned, He gives protection personally. Therefore, Maharaj Parikshit is protected from the very beginning of His appearance in the womb of His mother. And because He is especially given protection by the Lord, the indication must be concluded that the child would be a first-grade devotee of the Lord with all good qualities. There are three grades of devotees, namely the Maha Bhagavata, the Madhyam Adhikari, and the Kanishta Adhikari. Those who go to the temple of the Lord and offer respectful, or rather worshipable respect to the deity without sufficient knowledge in the theological science, and therefore without any respect for the devotees of the Lord, are called materialistic devotees, or Kanishta Adhikari, the third grade devotees. Secondly, the devotees who have developed a mentality of genuine service to the Lord and who thus make friendship only with similar devotees, show favor to the neophytes, and avoid the atheists is called a second grade devotee, or called second grade devotees. But those who see everything in the Lord and everything of the Lord and also see everything an eternal relationship of the Lord, I should read that over again. But those who see everything in the Lord or everything of the Lord and also see in everything an eternal relation with the Lord, so that there is nothing within their pure purview of sight except the Lord, they are called Mahabhagavatas, or first grade devotees of the Lord. Such first grade devotees of the Lord are perfect in all respects. So, and this is an amazing sentence. A devotee who may be in any of these categories is automatically qualified with all good qualities, and thus a Mahabhagavata devotee like Maharaj Parikshit is certainly perfect in all respects. And because Maharaj Parikshit took his birth in the family of Maharaj Yudhisthira, He is addressed herein as the Mahabhagavata, or the greatest of all fortunates, or rather of the fortunates. The family in which a Mahabhagavata takes his birth is fortunate because due to the birth of a first-grade devotee, the members of the family, past, present, and future, up to 100 generations, become liberated by the grace of the Lord out of respect for his beloved devotee. Therefore, the highest benefit is done to one's family simply by becoming an unalloyed devotee of the Lord. So, Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Tasman namna Vishnurata iti loke bhavishyati nasandeho mahabhaga mahabhagavato mahan. For this reason, this child will be well known in the world as one who is protected by the personality of Godhead. O most fortunate one, there is no doubt that this child will become a first-class devotee and will be qualified with all good qualities. Okay, so in this verse, the first word is tasmat, therefore. So what this is referring to is the previous verse. So in order to understand the context of this verse in its fullness, in the previous verse, the sages, the brahmanas, who are blessing the child, they state that the Lord saved this child within the womb of his mother for two reasons. One is that he was a spotless devotee of the Lord. And two, the Lord was obliged to Maharaj Yudhisthira to save this child because he was the only surviving male heir of the dynasty. So for those two reasons, their presence, thus, namno Vishnu Ratha, this personality who is saved within the womb, he will be glorified all over the world. In one lecture, Srila Prabhupada pointed out that Maharaj Yudhisthira was very concerned about the future of this child. And it was foretold by the sages in this ceremony that he would one day be killed by the bite of a snake bird, and thus he would give up his life within 7 days. So this was actually foretold. However, the king was not so much concerned about how he would die, but Prabhupada very emphatically states that he was concerned how he would live. He wanted to know if he would be a worthy descendant of the great dynasty. So therefore, the sages say, Na sandeho. Also, Hridaya Nanda Maharaj, one lecture, was very much stressed in this. No problem. Na sandeho. Don't worry. He is going to be a Mahabhagavata. Mahabhagavato Mahan. Greatly fortunate personality in every respect because the personality of God had directly saved him within the womb. So this is reflected in the purport in the very first sentence where Srila Prabhupada states that the Lord gives protection to all because he is their supreme leader. So this is very profound. A leader is one who takes care of his dependents for two reasons. One is that he has a sense of responsibility or obligation towards his dependents. And then two, he has the ability to take care of his descendants. So that is stated very nicely in the Katha Upanishad, as Srila Prabhupada points out. That verse in the Katha Upanishad is nityo nityanam. So there's one nitya and many unlimited nityas, eternal beings. And then chaitanas chaitananam. There's one conscious being and many, many conscious beings. then Yo Bahunam means unlimited, many, many millions and billions and trillions, uncountable living entities. But there's one, Eko Bahunam Yo Vadati Kaman. The difference between the one and the many is that this Eka, this one, has the ability to satisfy all of the needs and the desires of the many. Also in that verse, it's interesting, Prabhupada points out that the rest of it goes, tam atma stam, they understand that they and everyone else are pure spirit souls. They're situated in that understanding. Tam atma stam, yenu pashati dhiras, and being so situated in that vision, they are equal poised, dhira, they're not disturbed by what's going on and the tossing and turning of the waves of material nature. Tam atma stam, yenu pashyati dhiras, and then te sham, they, shanti shashvati ne tare sham, they attain eternal peace, and ne tare sham, and not others. So, the personality of Godhead, he takes care of all living entities, but as pointed out here by Srila Prabhupada, those that are not in line with the personality of Godhead, they're also protected by and maintained by the personality of Godhead. But as it's stated here, such protection is given by his different potencies to different grades of living beings. So those that are not surrendered to, have taken shelter of the personality of Godhead, they're also maintained and protected by the Lord, but in a different way than that of his devotees. Now, we have examples in the Shastras of great personalities that have gone out of their way to protect their dependents. Because we see in this world, if you're in a position of authority or giving shelter to others, then one is automatically responsible, even in an ordinary sense. You know, if you have children, you have an obligation towards them. Or even if you have pets, you know, you take care of them. Or elderly members of the family, your mother or your father, when they become elderly, you have that sense of obligation. Oh, Rasa Rasika is asking to come in. Hold on just 1 second, Prabhupada. Sorry, intermission. Okay, Rasa Rasika. So, all of these natural authorities take care of their dependents. Just as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, he says, Sarva Yonishu Kaunteya. So all of the living beings who have taken birth within this material nature, Sarva Yonishu Kaunteya, Murtaya, they get bodies, Sambhavantiya, that are thus manifested, and then Tasa Mahad Yonir, Ahang Bija Pradapita, I am the seed-giving father. I give them the bodies, I provide everything that they need. So as a seed-giving father, he protects not just his devotees, but all living entities. So we see this in the example of great personalities as well. Just like, you know, we have the history in the Mahabharata about Maharaj Yudhisthira when he was the last one to leave his body after all of his brothers left in Draupadi. There was a dog that took shelter of him. And unless the dog could come back to the heavenly planets with him, he said he would not give up his shelter. And then it turned out to be Lord Brahma. I'm sorry, Lord Indra. Or we have coming up, let's see, we're on verse 17. Oh, okay. So 3 verses from now, verse 20, we're going to read about Maharaj Shivi, who was Maharaj Yudhisthira heard from these sages that his grandson was going to be filled with all these good qualities. And one of was that as far as his charity, he was going to be just like Maharaj Shivi, who there was a pigeon that came into his lap seeking a shelter, chased by an eagle. And then there was a conversation between the king and the eagle. which eagle said that I will not give up this prey. I must have him only if you're willing to give an equal amount of your flesh. So he started cutting off flesh and putting on a scale. And then the pigeon on the other side of the scale mystically became heavier and heavier. So finally, the king, even after cutting off pieces of his own flesh, he put his entire body on the scale. And then the pigeon was Indra, who revealed himself. I'm sorry, the pigeon was Agni, and then the eagle revealed himself as Indra, just to show how charitably disposed and how responsible the king is. Now, of course, these are very extraordinary examples. However, even a little bit more, closer to home, you know, as anyone on the Big Island knows, we have this Mataji Mangala. She has her son who had an accident, I think, diving into the Ganga in India, and he is suffering from paralegia. You know, the whole bottom half of his body can't move. So, of course, you know, his mother is being very, very responsible, taking care of the son. And one may say, well, that's what you expect. You know, the mother has to take care of. But still, it's noteworthy to see in this personal instance how a mother is so devoted that even without sufficient means, being an only mother, the breadwinner of the family, still taking such responsible care of a child who is helpless. So if in this world we can see, you know, amongst our devotee friends, you know, such care and attention, we can imagine how much the personality of Godhead feels obligation towards us. But the difference is that he has unlimited resources. So how much better he can take care of us? That we have to have that understanding and not be in anxiety about our maintenance. How will we exist? In Ottawa, in December of 2009, Ottawa, Canada, there was an instance of a man who had dropped off his 8-year-old daughter, and then he looked across and there was a lady pulling out of her driveway, and she ran over a 6-year-old girl, and he ran over to the car, and he lifted it and picked it up over off of this girl so they could pull her out. And this man was 32 years old. He was 5'7", about my, a little bit shorter than I am, 185 pounds, about mine, a little bit heavier than me. And he picked up this car, which is almost 4,000 pounds. That's 2 tons. To put that in perspective, it would be just like if you had a 1 or 2 year old infant and who weighs about 20 pounds. And if there was 3 full-grown adults on a sofa, and this child would come and, you know, see maybe a toy doll or, you know, a kitten under the being crushed, would pick up that sofa with 3 adults on it. That's what it would be like for a man that size to pick up a car. After he did it, he said he had no idea how he did it. He tried to pick up a car later on the day, and he had no idea. He said that it was just by the power of God that he was able to do that. Otherwise, it can't be duplicated. So if we can see in an ordinary person being in that kind of a situation, when he sees a helpless person underneath a car and was able to lift a car, we can just imagine how intense that type of feeling is to help those who are helpless. So similarly, the personality of Godhead, who has unlimited resources, is obliged and willing to protect all living entities. But the difference is between those who are rebellious and those who are good sons is that the personality of Godhead takes a personal interest in his devotees. Therefore, in this verse, it says, Maha Bhagavato Mahan, that certainly, therefore, this personality, Maharaj Parikit, would be a first-class devotee of the Lord because the Lord personally came to save him. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada states, such protection is given by his different potencies to different grades of living beings, but as far as his unalloyed devotees are concerned, he gives protection personally. So we can think about this just like a parent is very, any good parent is very cautious and attentive to make sure that if they have a child, if the child is doing something dangerous that will hurt him or others, or if he's acting in such a way that will hurt him in the future, that he corrects the child even to the point of giving them a strong slap or punishing them. And even though the child may resent it or not understand, why am I suffering at the hands of my parents? Still, the parents correct the children. Similarly, the personality of Godhead, through the potency of his diverse energy, he benedicts or punishes different grades of living entities. However, for the good child, for the good sons or daughters, the personality of Godhead takes a direct interest. This is reflected in a verse by Chanakya Pandit, where he relates that many bad habits are developed through indulgence of our dependence, whereas many a good chastisement that comes from the superior develops good qualities. So therefore, he says, you should beat your son and you should beat your pupil and never indulge them. That's what his advice is. Now, of course, we have to put this into context because in another verse, Chanakya says that you should fondle a son until he is 5 years of age, use a stick for another 10 years, until he's 15, but when he has attained the 16th year, treat him as a friend. So it has to be put in context. But the personality of Godhead, he may put us into difficulties that seemingly we just cannot understand. We can become angry and resentful, just like a rebellious child. But the personality of Godhead is trying to reform us, just as the parents are reforming the child so that in his present and future life, in this life or the next life, will become will enjoy life. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Samo hum sarvabhuteshu, I am equal to all living entities. Nadvesha, nadveshosti, napriya, neither do I hate anyone or are envious of anyone, or do I specifically favor anybody. I'm equal to all, Samo. Ye bhajanti tu mang bhakya, one who worships me by loving devotion. Ye bhajanti tu mang bhakya, mayi te te shu chapyaham. I am in them, and I am, or they are in me, and I am a friend to them. So this is an amazing statement that Krishna is saying, that I am in them, and they are in me. That's what he's stating here. Mayi te te shu chapyaham. So we just heard a wonderful class on Sunday morning, Ravindra Shroop had given. We're studying in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Sri Krishna is explaining to Uddhava all the different mystic powers, how they are attained. And if Krishna is explaining that the yogi, by meditation on different aspects of the universal form of the Lord, he attains the nature of these aspects and thus attains mystic powers. Just like if one meditates on the aspect of the personality of Godhead entering into every atomic particle of the universe, he also can attain Mahima, is that what it is? Mahima? Lagim, or, yeah, I think it's Anima. Anima city is where you can become smaller than the smallest. So by meditating on the Paramatma feature of the Lord, you also attain the same features of that aspect of the universal form. So you become what you meditate upon. So Ravindranath, he very nicely pointed out that this is also stated a little bit earlier in the Bhagavatam, where Krishna is explaining again to Uddhava that there was once a brahmana, an avaduta brahmana. Let me just 1 second, let me look at my notes here. Yes, he was. There was a king whose name was Maharaj Yadu. He was the son of Yayati. And he was visited once by an avaduta brahmana who told the king about 24 different gurus. And one of the gurus was a wasp. The wasp was taken by, or rather, the wasp took a small insect and forced it into its hive and kept it there and just harassed it. And because of the smaller insect was so frightened being captured by the wasp, it through a type of mental concentration, actually a type of meditation, it took on the nature of the wasp. So there's a verse, 2 verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, chapter, I'm sorry, Canto 11, chapter 9, verses 22 and 23, which I would like to read, that talk about this process of meditation. You'll see how I tie this in a little bit later. So in verse 22, chapter 9, it says, Yatra yatra manodehi. So wherever the embodied soul fixes his mind, dharayed shakalam diya, by the concentration and fixation of his intelligence, which is unbroken, dharayed, through snehad dveshad bhayam, either through sneha, through love, dvesha, through envy, or through bhaya, through fear. Even those things, by concentration of the mind and intelligence, bhapi, yate tat tat sarupitam, I'm sorry, svarupatam, one takes on the qualities and nature of that which is meditated upon. The verse is, if out of love, hate, or fear, an embodied soul fixes his mind and intelligence in complete concentration upon a particular bodily form, he will certainly attain the form of that he is meditating upon. So you can imagine this. You know, when we're in a great state of fear or even of envy, you know, you just cannot give it up. You know, you just hate this person. You're envious of this person. You're constantly thinking about the person intensely. So out of love or dvesha, hate, or bhaya, being absolutely fearful, as we will see with the wasp, then one will attain the nature of that which is meditated upon. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, from this verse, it is not hard to understand that if one constantly meditates upon the personality of God, I'm sorry, this is not Srila Prabhupada, this is 11th canto, so this is the BBT. Purport, different devotees. So from this verse, it is not hard to understand that if one constantly meditates upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one will achieve a spiritual body just like that of the Lord. The word dia with intelligence, dia, indicates complete intellectual conviction and a particular understanding, and similarly the word shakalam indicates one pointed attention of the mind with such complete absorption and of consciousness. Surely one will attain In the next life, a form exactly that upon which one is meditating. This is another example learned from the insect kingdom as explained in the following verse. So again, this came in the context of the different siddhis. Just like if one meditates upon the aspect of the personality of Godhead in the different elements, and he meditates on the predominating deities of those elements, he can enter into the senses of other living entities and acquire prapti siddhi and acquire whatever he wants. So by meditating a particular aspect of the universal form, he enters into and acquires the qualities of that thing that he is meditating upon, the mystic yogi. So text 23 about the wasp, it is said, O king, once a wasp forced a weaker insect to enter his hive and kept him trapped there. In great fear, the weak insect constantly meditated upon his captor, and without giving up his body, he gradually achieved the same state of existence as the wasp. Thus, one achieves a state of existence according to one's constant concentration. So in the purport, it is said, the following question may be raised. Since the weaker insect in this story did not physically change his body, how can it be said that he achieved the same state of existence as the wasp? Actually, by constant meditation upon a particular object, one's consciousness becomes filled with its qualities. Due to extreme fear, the smaller insect was absorbed in the characteristics and activities of the larger wasp, rather large wasp, and thus entered into the existence of the wasp. Due to such meditation, he actually took the body of a wasp and in his next life, took the body of a wasp in his next life. Similarly, although we are conditioned souls, if we absorbed our consciousness in Lord Krishna, we can become liberated even by giving up our present body. So, we had, I guess, going on about a year ago, we had this seminar where Shareshwarprabhu invited Raghava Das Brahmachari to come and tell us about his life story. So he was Ratnavali Devi Dasi, excuse me, getting ahead of myself. Ratnavali Devi Dasi told about her story, how she had these dreams. She was had different types of paranoia, and then she went to go see some different personalities, and then she pieced together through one astrologer that in her previous lifetime, she was a brahmachari by the name of Raghava Das Brahmachari. And at the time of death, when there was somebody driving, and he was in the back of a van, and he got killed in the van crash, when he collided with another car or something. No, the devotee who was driving fell asleep. Anyway, they got in a terrible accident, and he was killed, this Raghava Das Brahmachari. But he was attached to an Indian woman who was working in the kitchen. And he was so bothered in his mind, he was constantly thinking as a brahmachari about this woman. And then at the moment of death, he thought about the woman, and he became a woman in the next lifetime, born into an Indian family. And then through astrological calculation, dreams, etc., he found out who he was in the previous life. So and then when his now guru, he was initiated by Srila Prabhupada in the previous life, and then just after that left his body, and in this life he was again initiated by Bhakti Charu Swami, and the Bhakti Charu Swami brought her to the point where she really was intrigued and wanted to find out what her previous life was, is that Bhakti Charu Swami, her guru, said, okay, Ratnavali, what brahmachari were you meditating, or what man were you meditating on it in your last lifetime? And it just like struck a core in her that, She was shocked by that, and then she investigated, and that's what happened. So we have to be very, very careful where our consciousness is placed, because wherever we meditate upon intensely, we will take on the qualities of that object of our meditation. Just 1 second, let me go back and look at my notes. Yes. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Ye yata mam prapadyante, those who surrender unto me, Ye yata mam prapadyante, tangstataiva bhajami hum, with loving devotion, mama manu vartate, manusha parta sarvasha, one who surrenders up to me or does not surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. So for the ordinary living beings, they're also being protected by the Lord. But for those who meditate upon the Lord, they get the same qualities of the Lord. And then as you have this instance here in the Bhagavatam, that Maharishi Pariksit is coming, being personally saved by the personality of Godhead. Such protection is given by different potencies to different grades of living entities. But as far as his unalloyed devotees are concerned, he gives protection personally, as we're seeing here. There's also instructions that we get by Chanakya Pandit. He points out that in a forest, a single tree, if it has fragrant flowers that blossom, then it makes the whole forest wonderful. So similarly, if we have a pious devotee of the Lord in our family, then that son glorifies the whole family. So when we learn from this verse that the Lord gives protection to everyone, but it's personally gives the devotee who takes shelter of him protection, we, it is incumbent on us, our obligation is to become a good son or daughter of the personality of Godhead, so that we also become Mahabhaga, Bhagavato Mahan. I think I can stop at this point and ask if there are any comments or questions. So, I know that was a little bit abrupt. I just thought I was running out of time. It's getting a little bit late. But anybody have any questions or comments? Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot to unmute. It's hard to get all these things together here. Okay. I got unmuted. Free conferencing. Everybody on free conferencing is unmuted. So anybody have any questions or comments?
Hare Krishna. Thank you for a nice class. You know, you talk about Chanakya Pandit. You said that you should treat the child nicely up to 5 years old, and then use chastisement, maybe some physical punishment and all that. So this is our scripture, right? So it means that we are for punishment of children, like with physical punishment, because it seems there's lots of debate out there whether that is useful or not. Can you say something about that?
Well, I know as a parent myself, there were some times that I really needed to, I thought that it was right to really beat my son severely when the time came. And later on, you know, he appreciated, because he was really in the wrong, and it was dangerous for him and dangerous for others. You know, so sometimes you really have to give a strong slap. Now, of course, like everything, there has to be balance. It doesn't mean that, you know, we're going to torture our children. And at the same time, it doesn't mean that on the other extreme that we'll never raise a hand. You know, say, now. There was one of my wife's friends, the story. She had a dog who was very, very cute, fuzzy dog, and she would let the dog live inside, and then the dog would go and pee in the corners. And then she would take the dog, she was so frustrated, she'd take the dog and say, Now, don't pee. Don't pee. And then my wife said that what she did is she took that, what are you going to teach him English now? So she said, so she took the dog, this fuzzy little, puppy, and then took her and then ground his nose into the pee and then opened the door and threw him out the door. And then after that, she didn't have a problem, but she was like a gas, like, oh. But in a similar way, sometimes you have to be very strict. It's really necessary. But Chanika Pandit is giving us, the guidelines here that when it's a small child, up to 5 years old of age, you don't, you spoil them, as Prabhupada said, good food, regulated rest, nice food, etc. You spoil them up to five, but from 5 to 15, you are a strict disciplinarian. And, not that we, halfway kill the children, but, sometimes we're very, very strong. We're very, very strict. But when they attain 16 years old, they are already formed. After that, you have to treat them like, not like children anymore. You have to treat them as friends. Otherwise, they'll revolt. That's as much as I understand as far as parenting goes. We're sometimes successful and not successful, but at least we do our best.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Ramananji, a wonderful class. I'll ask you a question. So, practically, when Krishna puts us in a very difficult situation sometimes, and it's can seem overwhelming, how can we fix our consciousness upon Krishna and remember Krishna in all the situations and see it as the verse Tateno Kampan Susamikshamano, that however difficult it is, we see it as a result of previous karma or just some situation Krishna's put us in to help us surrender. How do we keep from becoming sort of mental and seeing it in a mundane way? How do we practice keeping our mind so that it goes back to Krishna rather than just to something that's superfluous or not related?
Well, I can try and answer this as well as I can. We should utilize every opportunity, no matter what happens to us, whether good or favorable, to remember Krishna in every way. I was really inspired by this verse that we covered in the Bhagavatam, that actually Vinashri pointed out on Sunday, about how this wasp, by what he meditated upon, he took on the qualities of the wasp. And that verse is just so amazing that if by fear, by love, or by envy, by intelligence, that which in the object of our intelligence, we will get the same qualities. So these verses, this understanding of the Bhagavatam will help us to keep the proper perspective. That's what I was trying to relate, to connect, just like Maharishi Pariksit, he was in the womb of his mother, and his body was burnt by the intense heat of the Brahmastra. But he was saved by the personality of Godhead, so therefore he was, as when he was born, he was called Pariksit, the examiner, because of that impression within the womb. Everyone he would come in contact with, he would always be looking, is this the person
¿Cómo te va?
that here, I'll let you know, I'll show you there. Is this the same person that I saw within the womb? So similarly, we are thrown within the womb of this material nature. This is the example Srila Prabhupada gave on one lecture. We're thrown within the womb of this material nature, sarva yonishu, and it's darkness all around. But if we remember the personality of Godhead in all situations in life, yasmaret pundarikaksham, whether purified or unpurified, if we remember the personality in all situations of life, then we'll become purified both within and without. So my answer would be that we are inspired by and take lessons from all of these instructions given in the Bhagavatam, so that we can always remember the personality of Godhead, whether good or bad happens to us. So I muted you for a second, Narahari, because there's too much noise coming through. Sorry.
Oh, thank you, Prabhuji. Nice answer. Yeah, it seems sometimes Krishna, just like a parent, teaches a child gradually, and a coach, when trying to make someone stronger for his physical activity, you know, gradually builds him and prepares him. It seems, and maybe sometimes in spiritual life, Krishna sort of gradually helps us to understand by meditating upon, you know, seeing Krishna in various situations when it's not so difficult, and gradually sort of ups the ante. And I don't think Krishna would ever challenge us so difficult that we can't handle it. But yet the more advanced we become, like Queen Kunti, for example, boy, the situations that she was put in, which we were reading about, but yet she never stopped remembering Krishna. So I think maybe the little tests that we get along the way are helpful to prepare us for the ultimate, and the time of death, to always remember Krishna.
Yes, thank you. Anybody else?
Hearing these Bhagavatam classes really really sharpens our intelligence. It's sort of an everyday process. It seems like we may have a tendency to default back to a lower state of consciousness, but by every day hearing the philosophy, the Bhagavatam is so potent. It strengthens us. It purifies us. And makes it very, very practical and reasonable to be able to remember Krishna in spite of these difficult situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point.
Well, I have a question. In the purport, Prabhupada describes the third class devotee, the second grade devotee, and Mahabharata. And then Prabhupada says a devotee who may be in any of these categories is automatically qualified by all good qualities. And thus a Mahabhagavata devotee like Maharaj Parikshit is certainly perfect in all respects. So my question is Prabhupada means that all these good qualities is available for all the classes of devotees, or they have it already? What does Prabhupada mean?
Okay, my understanding of this, which may be flawed, but when I read that, what I understood from that is that even for a neophyte devotee, they're filled with all good qualities. Compared to someone who is not engaged in devotional service, the karmis, the gyanis, or those that are lower, that can't even be considered to be human beings, for one to be a devotee in whatever category, even a kanishta, adhikari, one who has the qualities or the abilities only to be unsteady in his devotional service and not to sufficiently respect the devotees of the Lord, but at least to worship the personality of God and give him all respects in the temples, still even that devotee is full of all good qualities. What to speak of the second and then the first class devotee? So my understanding is that means that there's just a gulf of difference between a devotee in whatever capacity of advancement he is compared to those who are non-devotees.
Thank you.
That's all I see. Okay. So if nobody has any other questions or comments, thank you very much for your kind attention. I don't know if anybody could tell, but I did try and incorporate some of the lessons that we learned the last two Saturdays. A little bit difficult, you know, constraint for me. But anyway, I tried to do that. I was wondering if, or hoping that others that maybe try what we were taught. I thought that was a great seminar on Saturday.
Thank you very much, Prabhu. It was a nice, very nice class.
Excellent class, Ramananji. Excellent night. I loved all the nice examples you gave.
Yeah. By the way, since we have a little time here, just before everybody leaves, I talked to Bir Krishna Maharaj, not talked, we exchanged emails. He was interested in what we were doing with our classes, the technology that we're using. And I told him that I would only let him know our secrets if he promised to give class to our Sangha sometime.
Good bargaining. Well done. So what did he say?
He said, yeah, he would like. He wants to do similar to what Hridayananda Maharaj is doing, to have like a simultaneous broadcast and do a seminar, simultaneously broadcasting on Ustream and on Skype. So he is busy for the next 2 or 3 months, but he would like to come on sometime in December when he's free and do a seminar. So that's nice.
Wonderful.
And I also exchanged emails with Hridayananda Maharaj yesterday. And here's somebody saying, just 1 second. So Hridayananda Maharaj, he is going to give seminar this coming Saturday. And again, it's going to be a little bit of a technological challenge, not so much on my side, I hope, but more on the side of everybody else that's going to be attending. So it's a simultaneous broadcast on Ustream and on Skype. The challenge is that because Ustream is a video broadcast, it's delayed by as much as 2 or 3 seconds or more. So there's not like a sync, a voice sync with Skype. That's faster because it's just audio. So I'll suggest is I'm going to send out an email that explains the intricacies. Basically, what you're going to be doing is just hitting a link that I give you to tune into the Ustream broadcast. And then during his presentation, he won't be taking any questions anyway. It'll just be, you know, him speaking. So you can turn off the volume of Skype and just hear the broadcast for Ustream, so the voice is in sync. And then when it's time to ask questions, then you can turn down the volume on Ustream and then hear it on Skype, and then you won't, there won't be like an echo. It won't be confusing. So anyway, I hope that's not confusing. And also, one other level of complexity is that Hridayananda Maharaj is going to be calling into free conferencing 8,000. So that way it will be easier for us to manage it, because there may be a lot of devotees on this. He's going to be having people from Australia and from South America, you know, his disciples from various parts of the world tuning in. So we may have as many as 40 or 50 devotees on. So we have to manage it through free conferencing. So anyway, I hope that isn't all too complicated or then confuse people more, but I'll send in an email probably today or tomorrow that'll explain that in a little bit more detail. Any questions?
Ramananda, how did you come up with a quote from Hridayananda? Was that from the Bhagavatam's purport in the 11th canto Bhagavatam, or do
nope.
you somehow tie in this verse with a lecture that he gave?
Yes. There was a lecture that he was giving, not on this verse specifically, but about the contents of what we're talking about now. And I just remember distinctly, Nasam Deho. And then when I just read the verse, I go, oh, that's where it's from. Nasam Deho. No problem. Don't worry. Everything's okay. That's how he would say. Because the Maharaj Pariksit was, you know, Maharaj Yudhisthira was very concerned that Maharaj Pariksit would be the worthy heir of their dynasty.
You have a great memory.
No, I just heard it a lot. Okay, so anything else, Rose? No, okay. Well, thank you again for your association, and we'll see everybody tomorrow or tonight if you want to listen to Vishabdev giving Bhagavad Gita class. He's giving tonight. Otherwise, Mother Urmila, again, will be giving.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Very nice class. Thank you all for your association. Hari Bol.
Hari Bol.
Uh-oh. When you make...